Welcome back to Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts. I am your host, Jenny Coco Kier. This is episode 11 of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts. And this week we're going to be recapping the 10th episode of season 3 of Outlander entitled Heaven and Earth. This episode is directed by David Moore. Again, just like last week, David Moore also directed last week's episode, The Doldrums. And it is written by Luke Shellhaas. I think that's how you pronounce it. I think he's a new one. I don't think that we've heard from him as of yet. We've been hearing that a lot of the writers and directors of this these last few episodes are new to the game, or at least new to Outlander. So Luke Shellhaas, I believe, is new, at least as far as I can tell. I don't think that he's ever written for Outlander before. Right now I'm looking at the episode wiki. No, he has not. So he's a new one to the game. And directed by David Moore, who directed last week. The reason why I'm focusing on this is because my first thoughts of this episode, I watched it early this morning, soon after the episodes dropped on the Stars app, fired it up and watched it. And my first thought was not that great. I really wasn't feeling it. Not on the first listen, or first view, rather. And then I watched it immediately right after. And okay, that was helpful to watch. It always is helpful to watch it once again. You know, most of the Outlander episodes that I watched, though, from the very first episode, I enjoy it. But this one took me a minute to kind of warm up to it. I will still say, even after three viewings, it's not my favorite. It's not my favorite episode of Outlander. I don't know. Some of it was just a bit kind of, I don't know, soap opera-y. I don't know what it was. It just didn't feel like Outlander to me. It just did not catch me. It did not capture me. It felt a little bit too some sort of, it felt like another show almost. It didn't feel like Outlander to me. And also, even though I said over the last few episodes that I like, Asshole Jamie, Asshole Jamie, kind of dickish Jamie was taking that asshole dickish thing to a whole different level in this episode. He was dickish to the point where you couldn't find a charm in it anymore. You know, I'm looking at him like, God damn, Jamie, you are just being an asshole for just the sake of being an asshole right now. And I understood, you know, he was mad, angry, frustrated, and understandably so. But yeah, the way he was treating Fergus, man, I wasn't feeling that. Like, really, Jamie? Fergus, you gonna treat Fergus like this? But I don't know. Anyway, let's get into the recap, y'all. Okay. All right, this week's episode had a cold open, just like A. Malcolm did. The cold open basically is the deck of the Artemis. We see the guys, you know, the crew doing their thing, you know, whatever they do on the deck of the ship. Jamie is standing there kind of, you know, anxiously waiting and watching the man of war, the Porpoise, that is anchored nearby with Claire on it. He's got his eye on her like he told her he would, just, you know, checking for when she returns. And then he notices that Fergus is talking, I think, to the cook for a moment, and then approaches Jamie. And Jamie says to Fergus, well, what is it with you and the cook? And Fergus says, oh, he had just gotten some smell good stuff, some rose hips and lavender and orange peel and stuff like that. And he said that Marcelle's room was starting to smell bad, and he wanted to get some stuff to make it smell better and to impress her. And Jamie kind of scoffs, and he's like, oh, yeah, why do I get the impression that you're trying to, or why do I get the feeling you're trying to impress me? And Fergus is like, no. But then Fergus notices behind Jamie that the porpoise is starting to move. And he brings this to Jamie's attention. And Jamie looks over there and sees that the porpoise is moving. He freaks out and runs up to the top deck. And he takes some guy's telescope and looks over. And notices that Claire is still on the deck over there on the porpoise. And he's like, they have my wife. They're taking my wife. And he freaks out. He's running down, shouting orders to the men, talking about, put the sail up, go forward faster so that we can catch up. And the captain is like, cancel that order, please. That is not what we're going to be doing. And he gives some more orders to the crew, and they say, yes, sir. And essentially, he tells Jamie, look, they're going fast, and they're trying to make headway to Jamaica in a short period of time. We can't do that because we don't have the kind of ship to handle that. They did tell me that they would, and Jamie was like, but they have my wife. He says, yeah, I know. They told me. that, they need a surgeon and they need her for the duration of the trip. They can't afford to send her back. They did assure me that they would deliver her safely to Jamaica and we can pick her up there. And Jamie was like, you agree to this? And the captain was like, yeah. And he's like, I have more. The captain, he says, I have more to think about than just your wife. And Jamie freaks out. My wife? My wife? And he attacks him. He grabs him. And the captain's men raise their guns and knives. And then Jamie's little ragtag crew raise their knives and guns also. And we have a standoff. And the captain says to Jamie, tell your men to put down their knives. And Jamie looks at him and he says, you heard him, lads, put down your knives. And so they do. And then the captain says to Mr. Warren, take Mr. Fraser below and put him in a cell. Take him into custody. And so they take Jamie and arrest him, taking him down below. And he, right before they take him down, he looks over and sees that the porpoise has gone quite a bit away from them, and he's very upset. So then we go to the title card after that. Well, not the title card, we go to the credits, opening credits of the show. And then when we get to the title card is some men with axes hacking into barrels of green liquid, and the green liquid is spilling out onto the floor, and they're just taking these axes and chopping into these barrels, and the barrels are breaking open and the green liquid is spewing out. So, okay, I guess that means something. We'll understand what it means later in the episode. Then when we come back, to the show, Claire is on the, porpoise. So Claire is basically telling them how, you know, they need to make sure that everything is clean and cleaned properly. And, that the sick men are moved to this certain area. You know, and then there's this guy, Jones, is who they referred to him as, who apparently is an antagonist of some sort. He says to her, well, where are we supposed to sleep? She says, everywhere else. She says, every inch of space has to be utilized. as long as we make sure that nobody is touching, because typhoid is spread. Typhoid fever is spread by people touching, and usually from urine or feces or something like that. And Jones is like, well, then I guess we're all going to die then, because in case you hadn't noticed, there's shite everywhere. And she says, most of this is vomit, so it should be fine. So she, you know, basically says, let's get to work. Let's just do what we got to do. So when she gets ready to walk off, or she's walking off, this Jones guy turns and he's like, some lady doctor telling me what to do. You know, and little, what is the little guy's name? The one that looks like a 12-year-old girl. The one that the Captain Leonard had, assigned to Claire to help her out. What is his name? Mr. Pound. That's his name, Mr. Pound. So Mr. Pound, the little, girly boy, he says to this, Jones guy, what was that? And Jones, said, nothing. And Mr. Pound was like, we are supposed to follow the orders of Mistress Claire. She's the doctor here. And per the captain's orders, we are to follow them. Is that understood? And Mr. Jones is like, yes, sir. So I'm like, go ahead then, Mr. Pound. Mr. Pound, with your little 12-year-old, 13-year-old self telling everybody what to do. He's obviously an officer. He has on a coat and hat, and he's dressed like he has more rank than the other guys, which is fascinating because all of these dudes look old enough to be his father. So, yeah. So as they're leaving the area, Claire is instructing these other people of, well, they have to dip their hands in this bucket. And the bucket apparently has alcohol in it. Claire says, make sure that any man coming in or out of here dips their hands in this bucket before they do anything else. When they come in, they have to dip their hands in the bucket. When they come out, they have to dip their hands in the bucket. So Mr. Pound dips his hands in the bucket, but as he's following Claire, he starts to lick his fingers because it's alcohol. And I guess he's like, delicious. So Claire's like, well, what are you doing? When she sees him licking his fingers, he's like, oh, I just didn't see wasting any other grog, you know, it was on my hands. So, hey, why not? She's like, look, let me tell you how this works. When you dip your hands in the grog, it's disinfecting your hands. But once you stick them in your mouth, you've contaminated again. So now if you touch somebody or their food, if you're sick, you can infect them because you've now recontaminated yourself. So please go back and re-dip your hands and don't put them in your mouth or touch anything. Okay. And he was like, okay. So he dips his hands again. So, you know, Claire is like, okay, this is going to be rough. This is going to be difficult. So then Claire goes up to the top deck of the ship. She goes over to the side looking out at the ocean, and she's narrating now about how, you know, she'd been on the ship for a day, and maybe there's only 50 miles or so separating the Porpoise from the Artemis, but that might as well be the 200 years that she had separated from her and Jamie. And then Mr. Pound approaches her and gives her a hat and says, the sun could be very forgiving, so I got a hat for you. And she thanked him. And then he said, there's some men on the ship who know how to distill alcohol from rum. They were some illegal distillers that we have jailed here. Should I put them to work building a still? Mr. Pound suggests. And Claire's like, you catch on fast, Mr. Pound. And he's like, okay, yeah, I'm smarter than I look. So, you know, I guess they're going to have these illegal alcohol still builders build a still so that they can create their own alcohol. And Claire suggests also that she needs to make sure that the men are put on half rations of grog, I guess, so that they can have more resources to make the alcohol they need for disinfecting. So Claire goes to speak with the purser and explains to him that, you know, they need the still built to produce alcohol, and that the men's rations of grog needs to be cut in half. And he's like, yeah, well, they won't like it. And she says, well, would they prefer to die? And, you know, he's like, well, what's to keep these men that they're getting to make the alcohol, what's to keep them from drinking their own supply? And Claire says, well, we can get some guards to guard them so that they don't do that. And the purser, you know, being all haughty, he's like, all right, fine. How many casks would you need? And she's like, well, how many men do you want me to save? So then Claire and Mr. Pound go down to where the sick men are. It looks a lot cleaner now. Looks like they've cleaned the men up and cleaned up the floors. They're swinging in their hammocks. And Claire and Mr. Pound go in to begin to feed some of the men. You know, feeding them the kinds of food that they can eat and drink. And Claire notices that Mr. Pound is holding a cup very precariously as the man takes a drink from it. And she's like, you know, you can touch them just as long as you make sure you don't touch your hair or your face while you're down here. And as soon as you finish what you're doing, wash your hands in the alcohol. And he agrees to that. So then she asks him, how old are you, Mr. Pound? And he says, 14, madam. Lord have mercy. And of course, she kind of stares all stunned. And then she's like, and what is your first name? And he says, Elias. And she asks him, may I call you that? And he says, I don't think the captain would like that. You know, the Navy doesn't do that. And she's like, well, if we're going to be working closely together, it would just be easier for me to call you by your name. But she did assure him that she would be very professional in public. And she asked him how long had he been at sea. He said he had been at sea since he was 7, and that his uncle, I think he said, was the captain of another ship called the Triton, and that he had a berth there, and that he was only on the Porpoise for this voyage. And Claire says, well, you know, you are a very impressive young man. And he kind of blushes and smiles like a 14-year-old boy would. Just heartbreaking, really. So then Mr. Pound notices one of the men in a hammock who is dead. And he says to Claire, that's Jim Quigley, I think he says, that he was a friend and that they were from the same hometown. And then some other men come down. Some of them are coughing and gagging. And one of the men says, we've got 4 more who've been infected. So Claire moves over to them and she says, make them go over here. And she starts giving instructions, giving them water and things. And she's distracted by this. As Mr. Pound looks at his friend, whose eyes are open, and he touches his face to close his eyes. Which I hope then he remembers to wash his hands after that. So after Claire has given the instructions for the new patients, she starts looking around the room and seeing all these men coughing and retching. And she seems to be fighting a losing battle. You know, it looks like she seems to be thinking, you know, something's wrong here, because what she's doing, I guess, should at this point at least be starting to help, but she doesn't notice that it is. So she's, you know, looking around the room and she's thinking. Then in the next scene, she's back up with the captain and she asks him for the logs, so that she, the doctor's logs, the last surgeon's logs, to see if he notated when the first person came down with symptoms, because she needs to pinpoint when this and who this started with. So after she and the captain start going through the logs, they notice that Claire notices, I think, that some of the people who had taken sick had these initials by their name, C-A-R-P or C-R-P. And she asked the captain, what does that mean? He said, that means they're on the carpenter's crew. And she's like, and do these men mess together? And she said, because if they do, like I've explained to you before, this disease is spread by people touching food or touching hands or whatever, and it's easily spread this way. So if they mess together, that would explain a lot. So he says, yes, they mess in the carpenter's area or whatever. And she says, do you have a list of the men who messed there? And he says, yes. And he brought that book out. And she's looking at the list of names of these carpenters. And most of them have the words or the initials DD by their names. She's like, what does DD mean? And the captain says, discharge dead. And Claire says, all of them are dead? And he says, yeah, all but one, Joe Howard. So she's like, well, where's Joe Howard now? Is he sick? And the captain says, no, he never got sick. He says he was reassigned after everybody else, you know, died. And he says he works in the galley now with the cook. So, yeah, that's great. So Claire and the captain go to the galley to talk to this Joe Howard. And he says, I'm fine. I don't feel sick at all. Ain't nothing wrong with me. And the cook is like, yeah, he's not sick. You can plainly see that. Nothing's wrong with him. And Claire explains very slowly and patiently, the man can still have the disease even if he's not showing any signs, and he can still be contagious and pass it on to other people. And the cook is not trying to hear any of this. He says, what is she talking about? I don't understand anything she's saying. Look, she's already got me boiling water and using up all my pots for that nonsense. And she's cutting our grog supply. And the people are still dying. They're still dying. Ain't nothing she doing working. The woman don't know what she's talking about. And Claire says, well, there's a reason that they're still dying. The man that's the source of the illness is in here touching the food. So the cook is like, look, I'm not giving up my last galley hand over some woman's silly notions. And Claire's like, they're not silly notions. So then the cook is like, well, either someone is sick or they're well. You can't be, you know, anything but that. And you can see that this man is not sick. And the captain is like, well, just because we don't understand, it doesn't mean it's not the case. And we have to trust her because she's the doctor here. So the captain has his master at arms take Howard into custody. Howard's like, what I do? And the captain's like, look, it's not because you did something. It's just to protect the other men. So they take him out, and the cook is not happy with this. He is definitely not happy with Claire. And the captain looks at Claire and says, I hope you're right about this. And so Claire is making enemies. So then we're back on the Artemis, and Fergus is getting some soup and some bread in the galley. He goes to see Jamie in the cell, taking him some food. I guess the guard tells him he only has 5 minutes, so he goes in. Jamie is sick. He's vomiting again, I guess because Mr. Willoughby isn't down there with his pens, his acupuncture needles. So, you know, Fergus slides the food under the cell door for him, and so, you know, Fergus is, I guess, trying to make small talk, asking Jamie how he's doing, saying this cell is kind of closed off. Jamie says, yes, I'm used to a cell, just not a floating one. And Fergus says, well, my lady will be safe aboard the ship. You know, she can't catch the disease. So, you know, Jamie told him that. And also he says, he says because she can't catch the disease, she'll be safe. So Jamie says, there's more than just disease on that ship. There's 300 men. So Fergus looks uncomfortable at that notion. So Jamie says, I've lost her once. I can't lose her again. Then he says to Fergus, you got to get me those keys. And Fergus is like, keys, my lord? He's like, yes, get the keys, set me free. Have you forgotten? You a pickpocket. Get the keys from Rains, set me free. We'll take the ship. And Fergus is like, mutiny? And Jamie's like, yeah. And Fergus says, we can't do that. I mean, these men aren't yours. They won't follow you. Jamie says, some of them will. I mean, we have our little crew. We got Hayes. We got Willoughby. We got Leslie. And, you know, some of the other guys will come along. And Fergus says, 7 against 20. That's not a fair fight. We'll lose. And Jamie says, convince more of them. He says, I know Manzetti will come our way. And he said, others will as well. And then Fergus, trying to reason with him, says, the porpoise is a day ahead. We'll never catch them. And then Jamie says, well, then we'll dump Jared's wine. He says, an empty ship will go faster. And Fergus is like, and when we catch them, then we will. What are we going to do then? And Jamie's like, I don't know. We'll get to that part when we get there, when we catch them. So Fergus, obviously seeing that this is irrational, says no. He says, no, I can't do that. I mean, I love her too, my lord. But Jamie goes off then. He says, what good are you, you damn fool? He says, I can see why I held my blessing from you to marry Masali. You obviously don't have any idea what love is. And Fergus is like, how can you say that? And Jamie says, because if you did, you would move heaven and earth. You would risk arrest, death, hell to save the woman you love. And Jamie says it would be as easy as a pinprick. He says, you would release me from this cell and let me rescue the woman that I love from her kidnappers. He says, until you risk it all, you don't know a thing about love. And then Jamie says, get me those keys. Get me out of here and I will give you my blessing to marry Marcelly. And Fergus lowers his head and it doesn't look like he's actually considered. I think he's just hurt, disappointed, because these words coming from Jamie have got to be difficult to hear. So then we're back on the deck of the Porpoise where they are lining up the dead. They have them in, I guess, these cloth body bags. And one of them is Mr. Pound's friend, the one that he discovered dead in his hammock. They're stitching up his shroud or his body bag. And Claire approaches and is watching. And Mr. Pound kneels down and looks up at her and he says, the last stitch must go through his nose, ma'am, to make sure that he's dead. It's usually done by a friend. So they close up the top part of this shroud over this Mr. Pound's friend. And he takes the needle and thread, and the face is covered, but you can tell that it's right over the nose as he's pushing the needle through the nose with the shroud on top of his face and puts that last stitch in there. And I guess that's how it's done. So in the next scene, we have a ceremony, I guess like a group funeral. Several of the dead are put on these gurneys, I guess, for lack of a better word, or these cots or something. And they're put on the edge of the ship. They're covered with the British flag, each one. and the captain says a prayer, and there's a drum playing, and it's a very, military type of service. As they are wrapping up the prayer, they then tilt the gurneys or whatever they are that the dead bodies are on, and the bodies slide into the ocean. Not with the flags are kept, but the bodies are slipped into the ocean. And then they show this close up of Mr. Pound, and he's crying. He's got tears in his eyes, and I'm thinking, what is he crying about? I mean, not that it's not, you know, a beautiful ceremony and you know, somber and all. I guess maybe some of the men he's familiar with or friendly with, particularly the one from his hometown. But, I don't know. I didn't grasp that he was that emotionally attached. He described the, young man from his hometown as, I guess, being a friend, but I didn't get enough of the story or whatever to feel like there was any closeness. You know, all we got was that he was staring at him as he was dead. He explained to Clara that he was a friend and from his hometown, and that was it, nothing more. He only knew his name and that he was from his hometown, and described him as a friend. So it was kind of hard to feel a connection between the two based on that very low bit of information about them. So I didn't get the tears. But anyway, you know, he's young, 14. Maybe they're just trying to express the fact that he's young. And even though he's probably seen death after, I mean, he's been in the military for 7 years. And this is a freaking 18th century British Army. You know, come on now. He's seen a lot of death. He's seen a lot of death. So yeah, this can't be all that unusual. But I don't know. Maybe I'm being silly. I just didn't get the tears. I think the show was trying a little hard at that point to have us feel empathy or closeness or sympathy or something for this child. And I do, but I thought that the tears part was a bit out of place. I feel like he should be more somber and more controlled, because that's how he has been this whole time. Suddenly now he's got tears coming down his face. That seemed a bit off. Just my opinion, but it seemed off to me. Then I guess later that night, Claire is on the deck of the ship, and she's kind of looking off at the water, you know, contemplating whatever, thinking. And she's approached by the cook, Mr. Cogsworth, I believe is the cook's name. And he says, 11 dead. And she turns and looks at him, and he goes, "That's more than yesterday. And what are you doing about it? Boiling water and washing hands." He says, "You know what? There better be fewer deaths in the days to come, doctor." And Mr. Pound approaches them both, and he goes, "As you were, Mr. Cogsworth." So Mr. Cogsworth, you know, hating being told what to do by a woman, apparently has no problem being told what to do by the 14-year-old. So he leaves. And Claire, you know, she doesn't seem to be bothered, or at least she has a real good way of pretending that she doesn't, because she's just got her arms folded looking at him like, "I don't give a damn what you think." So Mr. Pound says to Claire, "The cook has always been a disagreeable man." And then he asks her, "So how do you do it? Is there a secret to it?" And Claire says, "What do you mean?" And he says, "To stay so calm in the face of so much death." And Claire says, "Yes, actually, there is a word for it. It's called compartmentalizing. It means that I separate different parts of my life so that I can do my work." And she says, "If you let every death affect you, then you can't save any lives." But then again, Jim Quigley, I guess, the man who died, he was your friend. So he says, "Oh, well, I see." So Claire says, This won't be the last death that we see on the porpoise, Elias. But with any luck, we'll get through it. And Elias says, well, pardon me, ma'am, but I've seen you work for the last few days, and this has nothing to do with luck. But he said, if it does come down to luck, then you should have this. And he takes a rabbit's foot out of his coat and hands it to her. And he says his mother gave it to him right before he left for the Triton at the tender age of 7. He said that she said luck and health is what this rabbit's foot is supposed to bring. So he's giving it to Claire. And Claire thanks him. And then she asks, when was the last time you saw your mother? And he says, she's dead, ma'am. God rest her soul. And, Claire is just like this. I mean, she's not saying anything at this point. She's just staring at him with this heartbroken look on her face. And it's just like, wow, can this kid get any more? I don't know. What is the word? Just heartbreaking. I mean, I'm guessing that this is something that was not all that uncommon back then. So then they're approached by another man, and he says, excuse me, Mistress Claire, another man is taken ill. It's Mrs. Johansson's husband. And Claire's like, Mrs. Johansson? And Mr. Pound says, that's the woman who tends to the goats that makes the milk for the men. So then they go to see this other person that has fallen ill. When Claire gets to him, he's with his wife is with him, and she goes to check on him, and the wife says he's not breathing, or she goes, no breathing. She doesn't speak a lot of English. So Claire is, touching him, checking him. She says, well, he is breathing, but it's very slow. And then she puts her hand to his face and says, he's very cold. Then she looks over to the side and sees this almost empty bottle of liquid. So Claire, grabs the bottle up and she's like, of all the foolishness. And Mr. Pound goes, ma'am? And she says, half the men on this ship are dying of typhoid, and this fool is drinking the goddamn alcohol that I'm trying to use to cure it. And she's basically going off. She says, half the men on this fucking ship are dying of typhoid, and this goddamn fool is sitting there drinking the goddamn alcohol I'm using to clean it, to cure it, or whatever. Anyway, she's cussing up a storm, and Mr. Pound is looking at her with his, mouth hanging open. And Claire says, I'm sorry, Mr. Pound, don't mean to offend your tender ears. And Mr. Pound says, oh, I've heard such before. It's just never from a tender or gentlewoman. And she says, I'm no gentlewoman. So, she starts to tend to the guy again. And Mr. Pound looks at Mr. Jones, who's the person that brought them there. And they kind of laugh or smirk at each other. And Claire asks the wife, do you speak English? She says, little. And Claire says, your husband is going to be okay. He will wake up. Don't worry. He's just drunk. So she, Claire pulls him over on his side and then says to Mr. Pound, stay with Corporal Johansson. Make sure he doesn't choke on his own vomit. And Mr. Pound agrees to do this. So then Claire approaches the wife again and says, Mistress Johansson. And she says, call me Annika or Annika, my name. She speaks really broken English. So Claire says, Annika, thank you for all that you do. The goat's milk that you provide is saving the men. And Annika says, I keep do. And Claire smiles and says, yes, yes, please keep do. So then as Claire is getting ready to leave, Mr. Jones, starts rattling on about men will drink anything on the ship, Mistress Claire. They'll drink peaches left to ferment in the boot. Corn mash, whatever they can get their hands on. I remember one time this man put his head in there or something, and he's going on, but Claire's not paying attention. She notices that there is a Portuguese flag in the corner, and she interrupts him and she goes, is that a Portuguese flag? And Mr. Jones is like, yeah. She says, where'd it come from? And he's like, a couple of weeks back, we boarded this ship, you know, and asked if they had a surgeon on board. And she said, was the ship called the Bruja, which is the ship that took Ian? He says, I don't know. I don't remember. I think the captain would know. So then, you know, in the next scene, Claire is going to the captain's quarters to talk to him. She knocks on the door, but he's not there. She lets herself in. And she goes over to his desk and notices that his log is out. So she's looking through the log, trying to see if she can find his information. She does see where he logs the name of the ship. It's something else. It's not the Bruiser. So that's disappointing. But then as she continues to read, she notices that he's logged some information about James Fraser. And as it turns out, he has been told by someone that Jamie is a wanted criminal. And that they were going to have to, you know, take him into custody once the Artemis reached Jamaica. So then someone comes into the office and startles Claire. She jerks up really fast and tries to pretend she wasn't doing anything she shouldn't have been. And she says, Captain Leonard. But as the person enters, she realizes it is not Captain Leonard. It is the chef. And she goes, Mr. Cogsworth. I was just looking for the captain. And Mr. Cogsworth says, and not finding him, you entered notwithstanding. And she says, well, yeah, but so did you. He said, no, I was sent here by the captain to get his pipe. And Claire's like, well, then he'll be expecting you. And she tries to leave, but he jumps in her way. And he says, I don't like you, madam. And he starts to back her up until she backs into the captain's desk. And he says, I don't trust you either. And he says, I have the captain's best interests. And I want to know why you're here. And she says, well, you might have his interests, but I have his trust. And what do you think he's going to think when I tell him you tried to violate me on his dining table? And the man says, well, I guess it's his, I guess that instead of that being his desk, that's his dining table that she was at. Anyway, then he's like, Mr. Cogsworth is like, I did no such thing. And Claire says, and who do you think he'll believe? He'll have you arrested so fast your head'll spin. Now get out of my way. So he mean mugs her for about 5 seconds and then stands aside and lets her go past. She leaves, and then as she's catching her breath, you know, having been much more nervous than she pretended when he was, you know, questioning her, narrator Claire. And by the way, the narration, you know, sometimes I don't mind the narration, but at this point I'm thinking, okay, it's an overkill. We don't need to, we get it. We saw that she saw that someone by the name of Harry Tompkins was telling the captain about Jamie being wanted for extradition, okay, or incitement or whatever the fuck it was charged with. So, you know, so we get that. We now know that Claire has to do something, but they felt that they needed to narrate this to her, that her next move is now that she has to find this Harry Tompkins person because he has been blabbing about Jamie. So that's what narrator Claire informed us of, even though we kind of had an idea as she was leaving the office that that's what was on her agenda to begin with. So on the next scene, we're back on the Artemis with Fergus and Marsali. She's helping Fergus, I guess, clean his stump, his arm where his hand was severed. She's got a bowl of water. She's washing it for him, his hand, his metal hand, his I call it his Jamie hand. Jamie, like from not Jamie Fraser, but Jamie from Game of Thrones, Jamie Lannister, because he has the gold hand. If you know anything about Game of Thrones, anyway. So as Marsley is washing him, she says, "So he'll allow us to marry?" And Fergus says, "If I help him break out of jail, yes, he and we take the ship, and yes, he'll allow us. He'll give us his blessing." And Marsley says, if you fail, and Fergus says, then I guess we'll join my lord in chains. And then Marsley says, will you risk not being with me at all? Because if you're locked up, then there won't be anyone here to protect me on this ship. You know, and she helps him put his hand back in place. And then she kisses him and they start getting really heated. And, wait a minute. Fergus says to her at first that it's a risk, but it's a risk he's willing to take to be with her. And then she says, you risk not being with me at all because, you know, without you here, I'll be all alone on this ship with no one to protect me. And when they start kissing, it starts off innocent enough, but then it starts to get really heated. And, you know, at first Fergus is going with it, but then he's going, no, we can't. And Marcelle's like, in case you hadn't noticed, you know, Daddy's locked up and that woman of his is on another ship and no one is watching us. And with you getting ready to take this risk, this might be our only chance. And Fergus is like, no, we have to wait until we're married. I promise, my lord. And then she kind of smiles at him and she goes, you know, you're just like him. Stubborn. Once you give your word, you never break it. So Fergus leaves before they do something that he would regret, or they both would. All right. Back on the Porpoise, Claire is cleaning her surgery tools and Mr. Pound approaches and he says, Mrs. Johansson's husband has improved. And Claire says, good. And she looks at him, Mr. Pound, and notices he's looking a little tired. She says, have you slept? And he shakes his head no. And she says, well, you can sit down, you know. So he has a seat. And then she asks him, had he heard of a sailor on board by the name of Harry Tompkins? And Mr. Pound says, no, but I wouldn't know everyone's name. And we had 400 on board when we first started. And she goes, I see. So then he says, you know, we had 4 new cases today. I would have thought after we found out the cause, it would have stopped by now. And Claire says, well, there is the incubation period to consider. And she stops like she's thought of something. And then she says, the reason that I was asking about Tompkins is because he may be a second carrier. And then Mr. Pound sits up alert like, what? So he says, shall I inform the captain? And she's going, no, let's not start trouble like we did with the other guy in the galley. Just alert the crew that I need to find this Tompkins person, but don't tell them the reason why yet. And he agrees, and then he goes off to do this. And as he's leaving, she calls after him, thank you, and make sure you get some sleep. And he turns to her and puts his little hat on and tips it. He's cute. He's really adorable. Then we're back on the Artemis and Fergus is, you know, sneaking around trying to see what he can find, I guess, and trying to maybe see if he can possibly get this thing done that Jamie wants done. And he comes across a cracked door. He overhears men talking. He goes up to it to listen, and he can hear them inside talking about the supercargo being cargo himself now, referring to Jamie. They had asked if Captain Raines is in there, by the way. They had asked him if he was going to let him go. He said, I will not. And then one of them said, well, the Frenchie is still wandering around free. And they said, oh, the cripple? He's nothing. He's no nothing to worry about. And one of them says, well, I wouldn't mind getting a taste of his little lassie. And another one says, I bet she's no virgin either. And someone says, well, she won't be when I'm done with her. Of course, Fergus is out there listening like, you know, these motherfuckers, right? And the other one says, lassies are bad luck on ships. And the captain finally puts a stop to all this kind of fucked up talk and says, all right, that's enough for all that. Y'all get back to work. So Fergus, he leaves. He had noticed that the captain had the keys also on a key ring that he wears around his belt. So that's just, he's not going to be able to get those keys. And I'm sure he realizes that. So, you know, as they're getting ready to leave their little, you know, meeting, he leaves. So back on the porpoise, Claire is still in her area, wherever she prepares her potions or whatever. And the guards bring in this Howard person. He's fussing and fighting, and they push him into a chair. And Mr. Pounds says, we tried not to be rough with him, but he tried to hide. And this Howard guy, he's like, look, I don't know anything about no illness. I'm not the source of any illness. And then when he looks up at Claire, it's the man from the print shop, the one that was fighting Ian and started the fire by trying to shoot Ian. And Claire recognizes him. And she says, thank you, gentlemen. That'll be all. And she dismisses the guards. Then she looks at Mr. Pound and she says, and you're dead on your feet. Get some rest. So he nods at her and leaves. So then she looks at Mr. Howard and she says, now then, you know, she turns her back to him. He says, I recognize you. You're Jamie Fraser's wife. I saw you when I was rowing the captain over. I saw him on the board, the deck of the ship. And while Claire has her back to him, all of her surgery tools are on the table in front of her. And she picks up a really, heavy looking, I think it's a bone saw. And she's holding it and she says, yes, I am Jamie's wife. And, she turns around to face him and says, you're going to tell me, what it is that you know about my husband. And by the way, his name is not Howard. I'm sorry. It's Harry Tompkins, not Howard. I don't know what I got that from. And Tompkins looks her up and down, looks at the saw in her hand. And he's like, oh, what? You're going to cut my arm off? Well, go ahead and do it. Matter of fact, kill me. Because after the month I've had, I'll be glad to see the inside of a casket. Then he goes on to talk about how he 3 months ago was working for His Majesty's Excise for Sir Percival Turner. And, you know, then he follows a lad into the print shop and uncovers a treasonous plot. But then the little shit throws hot lead in his face and scars him for life. So, you know, I had said in a previous recap that that was hot soup. Apparently it was hot lead. So, okay. So he says he's been scarred for life now. And after he discovers a treasonous plot, he's thinking he's going to be promoted. You know, he's going to be rewarded for this. But instead, he's put on this ship full of disease. So he says, if you want to kill me, go ahead. Here's my neck. Put me out of my misery. And Claire says, well, maybe I will. And she says, and my husband can't be arrested simply on the captain's words or Sir Percival's. And the man, Tompkins, he kind of smiles and he says, oh, they have him already, along with warrants for his arrest for murder and high treason. And Claire, she looks scared. Now she says, murder. He's like, oh, yeah. He said, guess what we found before they caught up to him? And he says, in a cask of creme de menthe. And Claire stumbles back because she remembers what was in that cask of creme de menthe that Jamie had told her about. So then they show a flashback of these men cracking open these barrels of green liquid. So this refers back to the title card. The title card was of these casks of or barrels of liquid being busted up with axes. And that's where we are here, where these men, including this Harry Tompkins guy, are standing around and several of the men are cracking open these barrels, apparently of creme de menthe. That's what this green liquid is. And when they open up one of the barrels, out pops a body. And it is the man that Claire had that had attacked Claire, and he had hit his head on the side of the fireplace, injuring himself. By the way, when they showed the body pop out, did anybody else think that it looked like the priest from season one? Remember that guy? I was just thinking, I'm like, that doesn't, I mean, I don't know. It looks like the priest. All the way down to the, like, the shirt and the outfit. I don't know. I'm like, did they just, I don't know, put a dummy that was the priest trying to pretend it was the dude that attacked Claire? But anyway, I don't know. It looked kind of fakey too, but anyway. Claire says, my husband did not murder that man. And Tompkins says, well, the warrants say otherwise. And he says, I've told the captain and he's going to write a report as soon as we go to get to Jamaica. And Claire says, well, I'll talk him out of it. And he says, oh, the captain's a very ambitious man. You know, he actually would like to, you know, command his own ship one day. Well, there's little chance of that happening, of course, but if he brings in a wanted seditioner, well, maybe then. And Claire is so mad listening to this, she's got tears in her eyes. And then he puts the cap on her. He says, yeah, the authorities are going to be waiting for your husband when he comes to fetch you in Kingston, and then they're going to hang him. So Claire has this man taken to, I guess, their quarantine area on the ship. He's thrown into a separate cell from the first guy, who was the first one to start the plague. And she says, yeah, this guy, Tompkins, he's the second cause of this fever. So they lock him in this cage and then they leave, and she looks at Tompkins and she says, if I were you, I'd stay away from Howard. Oh yeah, Howard's this guy's name, the first guy. That's where I got the name Howard from. She said, I would stay away from Howard because he actually does have the disease. So she leaves. Now, and Tompkins is looking all worried and he's standing far back in the cage. Like the man across the room in another cage could get to him. I don't know why he's thinking that. But I'm thinking, didn't he want to die just 5 minutes ago? Wasn't he like, yeah, cut my neck, cut my arm, I don't care. Do what you got to do. But now he's all concerned. But I guess getting that illness would be kind of a bad way to go. You know, cutting the neck would be pretty quick. But the illness, yeah, that's a slow, painful death. So I guess I can see why that wouldn't be preferable. So then we come to the Mrs. Johansson. She's feeding her goats. And Claire goes down to see her and says, I hear your husband is doing much better. And she goes, Jaws, thank you. And Claire says, you're welcome. And then she holds up a finger like she wants Claire to wait a moment. And she turns and gets something off of the shelf or whatever behind her. And it's something wrapped in a cloth, and she hands it to Claire. And she says, cheese goat. So Claire opens the cloth and sees that it's a hunk of goat cheese. And Claire sniffs it and says, smells delicious. Thank you. And Claire, you know, is looking kind of down. And then Mrs. Johansson says, what said you? And Claire says, oh, I'm sorry. It's just that my husband is going to be in trouble when he gets to Jamaica, and I have no way of warning him. And Mrs. Johansson says, oh, well, I help. And Claire's like, how? And she says, my goats need grass. And Claire looks confused. She's like, what? She says, goats need grass. So, you know, like that's supposed to be so obvious. And Claire's like, okay, well, gee, thanks again for the cheese. So Mrs. Johansson smiles and nods, and Claire leaves. So then back on the Artemis, Fergus goes down again to see Jamie. I think he gives Jamie some water, and Jamie's happy to get it and says, did you bring the keys? And Fergus says, no, I don't have them. Jamie gives him this side eye like, what? But then he, you know, kind of looks somber, and then he says, oh, you couldn't get them. And Fergus says, I didn't try. And Jamie's like, what in God's name do you mean? And Fergus is like, you haven't been on deck. You haven't seen how these men are acting. He says, you haven't heard how they're talking. If I help you escape and we don't, or I try to help you escape and we don't succeed, they'll throw us overboard. Jamie says, we will succeed. And Fergus says, no, we won't. He says, they'll kill us. And Marcelly will be alone. And I will not leave her alone. And I won't send you to your death. And then he says, you asked me if I would move heaven and earth for the woman I love. And I will, even if it means that I cannot marry her. Because I know you won't give us your blessing now. So Fergus gets up to leave. And he turns and says, I do this for you too, my lord. And perhaps I love too much. And he, you know, leaves, and Jamie is yelling his name, Fergus, Fergus. So back on the Porpoise, Claire is in the room with the men, the sick men now, and she's kind of looking around. And this John Jones guy, he's like, pleasant sound, isn't it? And she says, yes, it's silent. So there's no sounds of farting, retching, pooping, vomiting, splashing, and coughing. You know, everybody seems to be resting comfortably. And Jones says, yes, no begging Christ for quick deaths, no moaning, no groaning, just sleeping men. We're out of the worst of it now. And Claire smiles, and she takes out her rabbit's foot that Mr. Pound had given her, and she kind of looks at it, and she looks pleased with herself. Then she hears the sound of fiddle music playing, so it's coming from above deck. She goes above deck, and the men are up there. They're all singing, and, you know, I don't know, I guess in a good mood and having a good time. And this is where most of the healthy men are, by the way. They're lying around in their hammocks. They're singing, and, you know, Claire is walking amongst them, smiling and, you know, nodding as she goes by. And she's looking for someone. And when she finally finds him, it's Mr. Pound. He's in his hammock and he's passed out. And as she approaches, she notices that his arm is covered with splotches and he's very pale. And she kneels by his hammock and touches his hair and his face. And he looks towards her. His splotches are all over his chest and he's really pale. And he says, Mother. And Claire is smoothing his hair out of his face and says, yes. Yes, Elijah, it's Mother. And she says, it's time to come home now. And he groans and she kind of And I'm like, okay, this was confusing to me because it's like, okay, he's sick. All right. But why not start the process of, you know, cleaning him? And I don't know. I mean, okay. Why not start the process of cleaning him and giving him water, soup, and, you know, why all of it? Why do you just suddenly go, oh, you're dead? So, you know, there's nothing I can do for you. I don't understand how you leap from finding him sick in his hammock to, yeah, you're just going to die because there's nothing I can do. I've saved all these other men, these motherfuckers, you know, but I can't do shit for you. So go home, Elijah, Elias, whatever his name is. And in the next scene, he's dead. He's in his little bundle on the deck. And, you know, they're sewing him up. And Claire is giving the needle to do the last stitch in his nose. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? But, you know, it's not so bad because he's the only deaf that day. So, that's something. But I'm like, why was they so keen to let Elijah go? No, you're not even gonna try to save the boy? Jesus, I thought that was weird. I mean, they tried to make it all touching and everything. Before they finished sewing him up, she did give him back his lucky rabbit's foot, and she's sniffling and crying, and it says to him, "Your mother would be so proud." But I don't know. I'm just feeling kind of fucked up about the whole fact that they didn't even fight for the boy. Nothing. No soup, no water, alcohol, nothing. Just go home to your mom. You'll be all right. That was weird to me. So later that evening, Claire is on the deck of the ship looking out over the water. She's melancholy and feeling sad. And the captain approaches her, Captain Leonard. And he says to her that actually he doesn't say anything. He just clears his throat, and she turns and faces him. And then she sees why he's there, and she just kind of sniffles and she says, "I miss the signs. I just thought he was tired." And the captain was like, "Your efforts have been heroic. We only had one death today, as sad as it may be. And yesterday we had one of each and more the day before." And Claire's like, "It doesn't matter." She said, "The purser says that we're almost out of drinking water, and the sick need constant liquids to survive, let alone the well." And Captain Leonard said, "You'll do your best, and so will I. And we will reach Jamaica safely." And Claire nods, and the captain says, "I'm sorry for your loss," and then he leaves. So then Claire is called by someone, and she looks over and sees Miss Johansson and another gentleman. I don't think it's her husband, it's somebody else. And they said, "Mistress Fraser." And she goes over to them, and they say, "Well, they've caught a whiff." And she's like, "What?" And then he says, "Land. You can always smell it before you see it. And we'll have water for the men." And Claire says, "Jamaica?" He says, "No." He says, "We'll reach the Grand Turk by forenoon tomorrow, and then we'll have the water for the men." And Miss Johansson says, "And grass for my goats." So a light bulb goes off in Claire's head. Grass. Land. Now she's understanding what Mrs. Johansson meant from before when she says, "My goats need grass." That would be an opportunity for Claire to escape. So the next morning, they anchor at Grand Turk, or the next day, and they get off the boat with the goats. Claire goes with Annika to feed the goats. But the plan is that Claire, at a moment when the guards aren't looking, is going to just take off. So at a moment when they think that the guards are preoccupied and not paying attention, Annika approaches Claire and says, "Go. Go now. Warn husband." So Claire nods, and then she just takes off. And she's running, and she makes it a little ways away. And then she runs into Captain Leonard and two of the red coat officers. And Captain Leonard's like, "Madam Fraser, going somewhere?" Actually, he just says, I the goats are supping well," whatever that means. I guess that means eating. She goes, "Oh, yes, they are." And she says, "What are you doing out here?" And the captain says, "Oh, I thought the men would think a brothel in close proximity would be too much of a temptation for them to resist. So they were just making rounds, making sure nobody's trying to make a run for it. I just didn't think you would be one of the people I would need to be watching out for." And Claire was like, No, I was just looking for some herbs, man. What are you talking about?" And Captain Leonard said, "In the direction of the port." And Claire's like, "What? Really? Is that over here?" And he kind of smirks because he knows she's lying through her teeth. And he says, "Ma'am, this landfall is as much your victory as it is mine. But I'm sorry, I cannot let you warn your husband. He says, I know you saw what I wrote in my logbook, and I don't relish this task, but I am duty bound to report your husband's crimes. And Claire said, and you're duty bound to use me as bait. And he says, well, it would be breaking the law if I didn't do it. And he says, more importantly, I would be breaking a solemn oath. And Claire begs, she says, please, can you just look the other way? And he has a moment of wavering. He looks like he's considering, but no. He says, Marines, kindly escort the doctor back to the ship. So the redcoats take her and they take her back to the boat. So back at the Artemis, Jamie is still in his cell. And he's sitting on the floor looking through the photos that he still has of Brianna and Claire, you know, and he's got his little specs on again. And he looks good. He's not vomiting anymore, at least, so that's good. So then we hear the captain enter the room or into the area. And he says something about them coming close to landfall, I think he says. And Jamie says, what's that got to do with me? And then the captain explains that the passage through the island is hazardous, but much more so during winter. So he's going to need all the able-bodied men helping if they are going to make it through. And Jamie smirks and he says, oh, okay, so now I'm able. Now I'm an able body. So then he turns and he looks at the captain and notices that Marcelly is standing with the captain. And he's like, what's she doing here? And Marcelly says, I've assured the captain. Oh, the captain says, she's assured me that you will not rebel if I let you free. And Marcelly says, yeah, if you give your word, you'll keep it. So Jamie asks her, what is she doing? And she approaches him and she says, just give your word and he will set you free. And she says, you don't see what he's doing for you, do you? And Jamie's like, Rains? And she says, no, Fergus. And Jamie's like, what Fergus did, he did for you. And Marcelly's like, if you believe that, you don't deserve to be set free. And you know what? I gotta say, you know what? I like Marcelly. Marcelly is kind of a no-nonsense bitch. I can appreciate that. I appreciate that no-nonsense shit. She's really, she's not that, because I'm going to be honest, from the book, in the beginning, Marcelly is a sniveling little whiny thing that I cannot stomach. It's really difficult to deal with her. But in the show, she's no-nonsense, way more mature than you would ever expect someone of her age to be, and way more mature even than her mother. So that's saying a lot. So the captain lets Jamie out, and then he approaches Fergus and Marcelly, and he says, you may have a moment, but I need all hands on deck ASAP, basically. So he leaves them alone. Jamie comes out, and he approaches Marcelly and Fergus, and he says, okay, you guys have my blessing to get married when we get to Jamaica, but it has to be by a priest. And then he says to Fergus, you'll have to prove yourself to her as much as to me. And then Fergus interrupts, look, let's just get to Jamaica. Okay, then we can talk about all that. So then he looks at Fergus and he thanks him. Monfris, I think he calls him. Don't know what that means. It's probably Gaelic or something. So then he goes on deck to help. Jamie does. And Fergus and Marcelly hug and kiss. They're so happy. They finally got Jamie's approval. So we're back on the Porpoise now. And it's nighttime. And Mrs. Johansson and Claire are sneaking around on the deck of the ship. They make it to the edge of the boat and look out over the ocean towards something that looks like land, and there's some lights there. Mrs. Johansson points and says, Coburn, you go, jump. And Claire's like, jump? And she looks over down at the water and she says, no, I can't jump in the ocean in the middle of the night. I'll drown. And Mrs. Johansson says, no, 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 not drown. And then she goes over to something that's covered up on the, you know, in the corner, and she uncovers it. I don't know what it is. It's something wrapped in some ropes or something. And she says, no, not drown. She says, Coburn, not far, ship not far. You go, some shit. I don't know. Her English is very broken, but she's explaining to Claire that she won't drown, that all she has to do, she says, the water will move you to Coburn, and you won't drown. You don't have anything to worry about. So Claire looks at this wrapped up thing on the deck, and she's like, a raft. So apparently this is a raft of some kind. It doesn't look like one to me, but that's what she says. But she's shaking her head no. She's like, no, this won't work. I can't do this. So then one of the men on the deck rings the bell 8 times. 8 bells and all's well. So that means it's about 8 o'clock at night. So Mrs. Johansson pulls Claire over to the side. Look, you got to go. Your husband's going to hang if you don't do this. And of course, she's not saying it like this, because husband die, husband hang, no do this. Go now, you must go. And then Mrs. Johansson even takes out a pouch of money and gives it to Claire. Money, pay for ship. And Claire looks hesitant for just a moment, then she takes it. Okay. So Mrs. Johansson, okay, now you have to take off your skirt. So Claire starts to get undressed. She takes off her skirt, her shoes, stockings, all that. She's down to her shift, I guess, and her bum roll is still hanging on, which looks funny. But as Mrs. Johansson wraps something up for, I guess, some food or provisions or whatever, and the thing that's the bundle on the deck, the raft, when she picks it up, when they both pick it up and put it on the edge of the boat, you can see now that it's just 2 barrels that are tied together. So yeah, it's a raft. It's a raft so that Claire can hang on to it and not drown. So they put it on the edge of the boat. They drop it into the water. And then Claire gets up on the edge of the boat and she hesitates for just a few moments. And then she says, Jesus H. Roosevelt Christ. And one last breath, and then she jumps into the water. And once she hits, we go to the ending credits, and that's the end of the episode. So, yeah, that's the end of episode 10 of Outlander, Heaven and Earth. I had several issues with this episode. The main issue that I have with the episode is that it just seemed very... Well, first of all, this episode, for the most part, just seems like filler to me. It seems like a filler episode. I don't really understand the importance of the whole relationship that Claire established with Pound, other than just to be something to talk about. What was the point? What was the point of her and Pound's connection and his eventual death? There was absolutely no reason for any of it, at least not that I can tell at this point. Maybe later in the show we'll see that there was some significance or some point for it, but at this point I don't see any reason for it. I don't like the way Jamie was acting toward Fergus initially. I don't like unreasonable and irrational Jamie. I've always thought that Jamie always seemed, no matter what, like a level-headed dude, like someone who always thinks before he acts, even when he's desperate, even when it comes to dealing with rescuing Claire from some sort of detrimental situation, which this was. But he was very irrational during this episode. He was asking Fergus to do something that he knew Fergus alone would not be able to do. Or he had to know, or he should have known. And that he wasn't even thinking or caring about Fergus's well-being and wanting Fergus to risk his life and then not even thinking about what would happen to Marcelly if something happened to Fergus while his ass is locked up. I just thought, yeah, all of that just seems so un-Jamie. Now, I know Jamie has been un-Jamie for most of this period of the story, but he wasn't this much un-Jamie. You know what I mean? But then again, you know, the whole thing with Ian and how he risked Ian, it makes you go, well, maybe it is new Jamie. I don't know. New Jamie is kind of callous, right? New Jamie is like, hey, yeah, take a chance. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I just felt in this episode, it was just even more Jamie being like kind of, you know, this foolish, dickish asshole. And I just wasn't feeling him. So I don't know. King of men, not today. Mm-mm. Not today. Jamie was missing that king of men element. I just wasn't feeling all that. So Fergus was the king of men today. We're going to give that title to Fergus this episode. And Pound. Pound is a close second. All right, guys, I'm not going to really do any book comparisons on this episode. We're almost at the 1 hour and 30 minute mark. I'll make one compare. I will just say this. There's a lot of stuff that's different in the show this episode that was not than what was portrayed in the book. Jamie in the book did not risk anybody else's life. He did not try to get any, he wasn't arrested, first of all. Somehow he managed to get off the boat and get to the man of war some kind of way. Unfortunately, by the time he made it to the man of war, Claire had already escaped. She had already gotten off the man of war. But Jamie did leave the man of war, and he didn't risk anybody else. He was just like, I'm just going to go save my fucking wife. So that's what he did. He left. The minute that Claire was taken, he left to try to rescue her, and no one tried to stop him. And he made it to the man of war, and all kinds of other shit happened. He ended up taking over another ship, and it was a lot. It was a lot that ended up happening, but maybe I shouldn't be saying that because that might still happen. You never know. There's still more voyage to go through before they make it to Jamaica. So, okay, I won't say anything else. There was also something that was supposed to happen on the Porpoise that did not happen. And to be quite honest with you, I'm glad that it didn't happen, because when I read about this in the book, this particular thing that happened, it seemed so unrealistic and so convenient. Maybe it'll happen. Well, I think it has to happen eventually, but I'm glad that they took it out of the story the way that it was in the book, because when I saw that this happened in the book, I remember even on my first read thinking, this is so unrealistic. How, come on, like that would really happen? Like, oh, how convenient that this happens. I know it's supposed to happen to move the story along, but I just thought it was just way too coincidental for this occurrence to happen. And for those of you who are book readers, you know what I'm talking about. It happened on the Porpoise. And I'm glad that they took it out. I'm sure that Claire and this situation will occur, but it just didn't happen on the Porpoise the way that it did in the book. And that's good, because that was a problem with the book, I thought. That was just way too, I don't know, way too cliche or too convenient. It just did not make sense. At least not realistically. It just didn't. All right. That's it for this week's episode of Bannix, Bonnets, and Kilts, guys. I'm your host, Jenny Coco Cure, signing out. Thank you guys for tuning in. Let's tune in next week when we review or recap the episode Uncharted, which is Outlander Season 3, Episode 11, airing on November 26th. So be sure to tune in for that, guys. Thank you all. Thank you all for joining me again this week. And please come back next time for the next recap In the meantime, take care and don't do anything I wouldn't do. Holla. Bye.